my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Welcome to episode 292 of My 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. Happy belated Father's Day to all the dads out there. We're going to be talking about Father's Day in just a few minutes, but as it relates to wrestling, obviously. But my guest this week, and actually my guest for next week, full disclosure, we're knocking out two episodes here as I prepare to leave town for a few days for vacation, but I wanted to stay ahead on podcasting. Chad Smart from the Positive Cynicism Podcasting Network. Chad, welcome back, and thanks for joining me.
Oh, always a pleasure to be here. I'm just hoping next week's taped and advanced episode that Eric Bischoff doesn't give away our comments over on the 83 Weeks podcast.
That may happen. That may happen. You know, full disclosure, as we record this, literally, and by Monday morning as this drops, things may have even gotten worse or developed in different ways. But there are a lot of allegations going on right now in the world of professional wrestling as it relates to sexual harassment, sexual assault, improprieties going on. Some wrestlers have lost their jobs. Others are being investigated. We're not going to name names. We're going to keep this a very general, basic, civil discussion just for a couple minutes. Of course, again, we're in a situation, Chad, where it's two middle-aged or probably a little older than middle-aged white guys talking about issues that we can't relate to in terms of gender or race, but as wrestling fans, I think we both have opinions and wanted to quickly get our voices out there and heard about it. But, you know, I'm going to start it off with saying it all kind of started with the Me Too movement probably, what, about 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago in Hollywood. And then it kind of creeped into other areas of life. I'm quite honestly a bit surprised that it took this long for the wrestling world to kind of feel that ripple effect from all of this.
Yeah, I mean, the Me Too movement, I thought was going to actually be a bigger deal than it was, given, you know, that I work in the Hollywood industry. I'm by no means well-connected, but I've been here for 13 years. I heard stories that about people who have yet to be outed by the Me Too movement. I really thought when Harvey Weinstein went down that that would open up a lot of floodgates, and I think I mentioned when you were on my Politiclamity podcast a few episodes back that I had attended a panel at a Politicon on Me Too, and even the women that were on the panel who were speaking out about it were still afraid. I shouldn't say afraid, but were still not naming names because they didn't want to hinder their careers. And so I think in the wrestling world, you see a lot of that. You know, that might be a reason as well, because a lot of the names that have been outed, you know, in the last few days are people who kind of have a lot of power or stroke, as they like to say in the wrestling world. And so maybe it's wrestlers or fans who don't want to endanger their careers or seeing their favorite wrestlers or promotions continue on.
Right. And I want to put another disclaimer out there and another caveat to this conversation. Chad and I, before this, obviously we started rolling, probably had a 20-minute conversation as well about not wanting to victim shame. And we are not, you know, we're not here to be the court of public opinion, which is what is happening on social media. And I think, Chad, we've talked about this on Politiclamity, like you said, you know, the court of public opinion is judge, jury, and executioner before the legal wheels can even start beginning to roll.
Yeah, I am not. When the Me Too movement started and they were like, oh, believe all women, when I disagree with that statement, I believe all women should be heard.
Yeah.
But until accusations come up, or, you know, until there's proof and there's a follow-up, just going on social media and leveling an allegation against someone shouldn't be the be-all, end-all. There needs to be, you know, and I understand, in, you know, in types of situations that we're dealing with, it is hard a lot of times to have proof or have backup, unless, like all the people that apparently sent text messages that incredibly foolish if you're going to be doing this type of thing. But yes, it is more about just taking this, I don't want to say taking it with a grain of salt, but taking what you hear and waiting for the follow-up. Don't automatically assume. And I'll give you an example that we didn't mention before we start taping. A couple of months ago, you know, I'm reading a wrestling message board, and someone had made a comment about Jervis Cottonbelly.
Mm-hmm.
Friend, you know, I'm air quoting, friend of yours and I's, who we both know and have talked to. And,
right.
And, you know, he's the world's sweetest guy. And I was like, oh, man, that really sucks about Jervis. Well, 2 months later, it comes out, it was someone pretending to be Jervis. And Jervis has gone on and said, look, I'm really sorry if this happened. If, you know, if you were affected by this, get in touch with me. I really want to try to make it up. And I'm working with people. But I never saw any of that information come out on the message boards.
Right.
That, you know, that's coming from Jervis himself. So I think the allegations that we're dealing with now are probably more substantiated. But it's that same thing where just because you see something on social media doesn't make it 100% true. Abraham Lincoln said that back in 1987.
Right. And, you know, again, we are not getting real deep into the weeds with this conversation, but it's obviously what everyone, literally, my Twitter is, you know, I follow wrestling people, news people, and marketing people. And right now, my Twitter feed is just blown up with these allegations. And, you know, anytime anyone that is accused posts something, or there's something from the company that they work for is posted, they're getting blasted. And then there are people there that are supporting as well. So, you know, we're not here to take sides. We're not here to defend anyone. We're not here to point a finger at anyone. But really, as a consumer of wrestling, as a fan, as a human being in general, no matter if it's wrestling or whatever the case may be, you know, don't let the public opinion dictate your thoughts and feelings on something. We're on a very slippery slope right now with a lot of things going on in the world today. And I think that the more that you follow that group mentality, and in some cases, yeah, we do need to come together as a village and make change and make positive change. But man, we do not need to be carrying the torches and the pitchforks right now, calling for people's heads when the police, in a lot of these cases, have not even been notified yet. You know, if your first inclination is to go to social media and blast someone and accuse them of a crime that will literally change their life forever, I don't know. To me, it's irresponsible to do that without having some sort of police report on file or something. And again, I'm not victim shaming. I'm not blaming the victims here. But I just think it's very dangerous. I've seen it happen before, not just with Jervis Cottonbelly, but with actual real life human beings that I know in my community and in other parts of where I live that have been accused. And then the accuser later recants the story and says that it was fabricated. And I'm not saying that that's the case in all of these, but we just have to be, as fans, I think we need to be more responsible on what we instantly believe and retweet and you know, persecute and prosecute these individuals without knowing all of the facts involved. So, you know, and in some cases, I would guess that those who have resigned on their own accord, maybe there is some smoke to that fire, or fire to that smoke, I guess.
Yeah, I will just say, I think we definitely need to examine the wrestling industry, you know, because these stories are not new.
Right.
It's not like it just popped up over the last year or two.
And there's a reason why I said I'm surprised it took this long, because I in every walk of life, you know, and we've talked about this on Political Calamity, there are bad apples in every bushel, and that's the case with wrestling too. But continue with your thought. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's right. I mean, yeah, one of the message boards that I read used to have a sleaze thread of stories from dating back, you know, to the 70s and 80s. So this isn't anything new, but this is the time for the promoters to reevaluate how they deal with things, you know, in the locker room, the people that they're hiring. This is the wrestling schools the same way. And wrestlers themselves to look at the behavior that they're doing. And I'll just say, you know, if you are in a position of power, and this goes across the board, if you're in a position of power and abuse that power to take advantage of someone, you're scum. And right. If you are someone who has a fan base that, you know, has people that look up to you, and you abuse that fandom in a way, you know, like this, then you're scum. So I think as a whole, and I think, you know, again, going across the entire spectrum of every action in every realm of life, it's not hard to be a decent person, and we need more of that.
I agree, Chad. And, you know, again, we're not going to beat this issue to death. Chad, do you have any other final thoughts on this before we take a quick break and resume our conversation about father figures in wrestling?
Well, you know, I'll try to add some levity to it. I just hope that if all this smoke causes a lot of fires, I hope we're not looking at WrestleMania 36 world title match being Roman Reigns versus Kevin Huntsberger.
Well, I can assure you, not that I think anyone's listening, but no skeletons in this closet, so I would be available for that main event if need be, so. Or to announce it, or call it, I'm just saying. Thanks for the plug. Chad, thanks again for being a part of this conversation. And again, let us know what you're thinking, what you're feeling as well. And again, we're not looking to start a fight or a debate or an argument. We're just kind of weighing in and sharing our 1-2-3 cents on an issue that is obviously going to not go away anytime soon. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more on our conversation about father figures in pro wrestling.
Attention not-for-profit groups. Are you looking for a unique way to raise money? Stride Pro Wrestling fundraisers are always a hit. Since 2016, we've helped sports teams, schools, and civic groups raise thousands of dollars. Once COVID-19 restrictions are lifted, we'll be ready to rumble for you. Contact us through the Stride Pro Wrestling Facebook page to discuss the options.
Alrighty, Chad is still here with us, and we're post Father's Day celebration. I mentioned on a previous episode that this month has been kind of crazy for me in terms of guests and falling through and whatnot, but I can always turn to Chad in a pinch, and I knew that I was going to be on vacation, and I was going to need some backup content, so Chad very graciously giving up part of his Saturday afternoon to record a couple of episodes with me, so I'm appreciative of that. And Chad, we're going to talk about fathers in wrestling and families, I guess. We'll get into a conversation, and I've always kind of wanted to have this discussion and kind of pick your brain on some second generation, third generation superstars as well, and kind of see where they fall in comparison to their dads. So when you think of a father figure or, you know, someone fatherly in wrestling, and I'm talking like legit, not necessarily scripted or storyline wise, but we can talk about those as well, kind of go where the conversation takes us. But who do you think of when it comes to those fatherly figures?
Yeah, this is where I guess I really should have read your email a little bit clearer.
Okay, well, what are you thinking?
Well, because my first Father's Day person that I was going to bring up, you know, no one calls him the father of the clique because he's more like the cool uncle, and that's Big Daddy Cool, Kevin Nash.
Oh, okay, yeah. We are definitely going in a different direction. That's fine. We can do that.
So does this mean I also have to throw out Big Papa Pump, Leather Daddy from Wrestling Pro Wrestling? I had like two more jokes in there, but yeah, that's where I was going with this.
Were you legitimately going there, or are you just making it? Is this a bit?
It was the bit that I was going to stretch out for the entire show.
Oh,
really quickly. So,
Well, I'm sorry, man. That's good, though. I like that. Since you brought up Leather Daddy,
yes,
we've talked about him before. He's a bit of an odd character in pro wrestling. Have they started and we'll be talking more about Fandom in next week's episode, but have they started shows back up out there with Wrestling Pro Wrestling?
They have not. The last one they did was their virtual Boy Do We Have a Show for You, which was a show that they streamed on Twitch. I think you can probably find it on YouTube now, where it was kind of Tron-esque. They took the wrestlers and somehow put them into computerized form.
Oh, wow.
And wrestled that way.
That's kind of neat. Well,
yeah, but they haven't announced anything for any other upcoming show. I'm curious, because here in California, we're still, I think we're only in phase, I think we just moved into phase two, but then I know like theaters were supposed to open, we're recording this on June 20th, they were supposed to open yesterday, and then I think on Wednesday or Thursday, the governor said no because of the COVID numbers, we're not allowing that yet.
So see,
we're still slowly, slowly.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing with all of this is because each state has its own criteria for the levels. So, for example, we're on level 3. However, movie theaters and public places are not open yet. Like, you can go to a restaurant and eat outside. There's no indoor dining yet in Illinois. You can go and do, like, I believe some of the stores, you know, like your Best Buys and some of the stores at the mall are starting to open, and you can go and those kinds of places. But like movie theater, like you can't have a gathering of more than 10 people still at a time, I think. And I think they're kind of spacing people out at the stores and stuff, which is, and part of the reason why I'm bringing this up is because of Stride Pro Wrestling, which I'm heavily associated with. We are actually, as you're listening to this, the show has already dropped. It's part one of Stride Pro Wrestling Resurgence. And what we did, because again, you can't have more than 10 people in Illinois at a gathering. So over the course of several days, we recorded matches, and then I'm have been editing them and putting them together. And then we're going to drop them into two different shows, which, you know, it's obviously, and again, we'll talk about more of this in the Fandom episode, but it's not the same without a crowd, but it is providing content and it's keeping the Stride name and brand out there and, you know, hopefully giving our fans something to look forward to with a couple of new episodes dropping. We're trying to keep it as close to once a month, because we were running house show or shows about once a month, sometimes a couple a month, but typically a once a month schedule. You know, May we really didn't get much done because we were kind of regrouping after putting something together for April, but June and July we will have those two shows in the can, and hopefully by August we're able to have outdoor shows and maybe do something bigger with that. But that being said, let's circle back. You know, for me, the daddy of them all in the world of professional wrestling has got to be Vince McMahon, right?
Well, he is the one that is still operating, and unless you're talking Vincent J. McMahon.
No. I'm talking Kennedy, the right. CEO of WWE.
I mean, he has, you know, the what is his saying? The loins the size of grapefruits and his...
The genetic jackhammer?
Trying to remember how he would refer to his son Shane and his daughter Stephanie in very in terms that we never needed to hear back during the Attitude days.
Yeah, I don't remember that either. You know, the funny thing with Vince McMahon, obviously, when you and I started watching in the mid-80s, he was just the play-by-play guy on Superstars of Wrestling. I don't think many people knew at the time that he was the owner of the company. And, you know, it wasn't until probably really around the before the Attitude Era really got fired up that we start learning that he is really the man pulling the strings, so to speak. And we're introduced to Shane McMahon as a commentator on Sunday Night Heat back, I believe, right before SummerSlam 98. And then, of course, daughter Stephanie isn't too far behind, and she becomes an on-screen character. And then the family starts playing roles on TV. And some will argue that this is kind of not so good for the business with the McMahons running the show behind the scenes and on camera. And I think we're going to see a theme as we kind of dig into this a little bit. But, you know, Vince McMahon is a third generation wrestling promoter. His father, of course, was Vincent J. McMahon. And then his father was Jess McMahon, who also did some promoting in the world of wrestling as well. So I gotta tell you, as much, and especially if all the accusations going on out there now, and not just with what's going on with the sexual harassment and sexual abuse stuff, but, you know, Vince McMahon being accused of some other things with when it comes to the finances of WWE, I still have a tremendous amount of admiration and respect for Vince McMahon. And if I were to create a Mount Rushmore of creative minds or, you know, those types, Vince McMahon would be on mine, along with Jim Henson and Walt Disney. So I have a high regard for him because I feel like without Vince McMahon, wrestling would not be anywhere near what it is today. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, Vince had the vision to see the expanding cable market and take wrestling to make it, you know, first national and eventually worldwide. Instead of just keeping it regional. Now, you know, you can look at all the pros and cons of doing so, but, you know, in a market where, or in a business where you would think there would be more competition, it really took, you know, it took another billionaire, and then now we see another billionaire to come along and challenge Vince. You know, why couldn't Bill Watts take UWF bigger? Why couldn't Vern Gagne make AWA bigger than it was? What was it? And I think it was just because they didn't have the same vision that McMahon had to take it out of what wrestling was and had always been, and, you know, make it sports entertainment. And I think, you know, we could do a whole nother episode on why we haven't seen another boom period in wrestling in 20 years, even with, know, AEW being popular right now.
Yeah.
But the numbers aren't there to suggest that, you know, that we're in the boom period again. So, yeah, if you don't have Vince McMahon, I think had he not come along, I would be really curious to see, you know, even to see how many of the territories would still exist and have local television.
Well, yeah, I want to take a couple notes here. One, that is a good conversation to have, and we'll have that one sooner rather than later on the boom. I like that idea. You mentioned two names in that, one being Vern Gagne, one being Bill Watts. I'm going to throw Fritz Von Erich into that conversation as well, and we'll talk more about them as fathers here in a moment. And this is kind of the bridge I'm going to use to get there. Obviously, Vince McMahon, WWE is, yes, it's a large corporation. It's a billion-dollar publicly traded company. However, at the core, it is a family-owned business. And obviously, Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, her husband, are, I guess for lack of a better word, the heirs apparent, one would assume at least, you know, assuming that there's not some other kind of arrangement made. Shane McMahon has been off and on, you know, both on screen and behind the scenes with the company. Where are you on the family being as involved as it has been, both on screen and behind the scenes? Because I personally feel like behind the scenes, Stephanie and Triple H, with the philanthropy that they do, and this is where it kind of gets dicey for me as a fan, and I get it, I'm not in the demographic, but to see them out and doing so good in the communities and being a part of these events and stuff, and then they're still using that same name as, you know, Stephanie McMahon is Stephanie McMahon out in the public shaking hands and kissing babies, but she's also Stephanie McMahon, this vile bitch in the ring getting heat and, you know, costing Daniel Bryan championships and this, that, and the other. So it's hard sometimes, I think, to separate. But where are you in general with the McMahon family as its role as on-screen characters in the company?
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. It's I have no problem with them behind the scenes, and I think, you know, you can look at stuff that Triple H has done with the formation of NXT, and although, you know, you can also argue that, you know, how many stars has NXT actually made as opposed to just signing up the top indie talent that was already popular, mm-hmm. just giving them a wider form. But, I mean, but it's something that, you know, WWE never really had their own training facility before before the Performance Center. They would just use localized places like OVW or Memphis Wrestling as kind of a training ground. Whereas, you know, like, I it still surprises me that WCW had the power plant, because just the fact that that seems like something that wouldn't have been on WCW's radar to do. But, behind the scenes, you know, I think most of the philanthropy stuff that they do is great. And it, you know, the cynical part of me will also say, well, it's also them trying to get the attention that other sports companies regularly get, whereas a lot of people will just dismiss WWE for being wrestling. But on screen, I'm with you, where you, it's hard to separate those two characters, because it's not like they do all the behind-the-scenes stuff separate from WWE. You know, if they do the Susan G. Komen Foundation stuff, the Connor's Cure stuff, or Make-A-Wish, they'll bring it out, and Stephanie will be there, and Vince, you know, occasionally they'll be like, oh, look at how great we are. And then two segments later, it's back to being the evil character. Mm-hmm. And that switch, I think, is where, you know, it's something that hinders the product. Whereas if they kept, if they did the philanthropy stuff and either kept it off air, just did it, you know, not for the sake of trying to get recognition, just actually doing it out of the goodness of their heart, that would be one thing. Or if they keep Steph and Triple H and Vince off screen as evil characters, that would, that's fine too. And I mean, it's been 20 years since, or over 20 years since Brett screwed Brett. I think the evil authority figure is well played out.
Well, and we mentioned a few minutes ago, obviously Vince is the big daddy promoter, if you will, that we've seen involve his family and his children in it. You mentioned Vern Gagne and Bill Watts. I threw Fritz Von Erich in there. Obviously, all three of these men were wrestlers in their younger days and then became promoters. You know, Vern Gagne, of course, with the AWA. Bill Watts had the Mid-South UWF. And Fritz Von Erich had World Class. And all three of these men had children or a child involved within their companies and whatnot as well. And let's start off with Vern Gagne and Bill Watts, because to me, as hard as they tried, you know, Greg Gagne, for example, just never resonated, I don't think, or never caught on with the fans. And Eric Watts certainly floundered. And I don't even know if Eric worked that much with Bill in, I don't think, in the UWF at all. It was when Bill started booking in WCW in the early 90s that we saw Eric Watts kind of come to prominence. But I would argue that Fritz Von Erich probably most effectively used his children in storylines and whatnot and was the most successful. And I think that's partly because Kevin and Kerry and David, especially those three of the five Von Erichs that wrestled kids, had the look. They had that it factor and just resonated with fans. Again, do you, and I know this may be a hard answer to question, a hard question to answer, but you know, you have this family business or this business and your kids want to get involved. When do you kind of know when to say when? Because to me, Greg Gagne was, you know, I was not a fan of his at all, and I don't want to disrespect the guy by any means, but he was pushed to the moon and never was the champion, but was definitely one of the company's top stars.
I didn't watch a lot of AWA, so my knowledge of Greg Gagne is extremely limited.
Bob Schulte is going to be disappointed in you.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why I didn't watch AWA that often. I just, I don't remember when it aired, so maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, in the terms, you know, with the Von Erichs, it's, you know, you can say, like, Fritz was successful at using his kids and making stars of them, but at the same time, it's like, how much of it was exploitive,
mm-hmm.
and how much was, you know, this is what you're going to do? Because my knowledge of the Von Erichs is also a lot more limited than, say, the McMahons are. But it seems like, I don't know if they had a choice other than, you're going to be a wrestler, this is what you're going to do. And thankfully, they had the athleticism, they had the look. But, you know, you look back, and I guess as a parent, too, and I, not having kids, I don't know what this is like, but, you know, was Fritz aware of the drug issues
mm-hmm.
that his kids had? And, you know, that's the other thing, is like, you can talk about Greg Gagne not having the skill level or the talent or being popular, and should Vern have known, okay, look, this is for you, let's move you into, you know, kind of like how Vince with Shane, you know, Shane started out setting up the ring, became a referee, did commentary, and worked his way up the ladder. Should that have been the same thing with Greg? But, and then in the Von Erich case, should Fritz have been like, okay, this is having a toll on my kids, I need to step away as boss and be father.
Right.
More.
And yeah, I would imagine that kind of becomes, again, you know, we talk about those slippery slopes and, you know, the dark side of the ring explores the whole Von Erich issue. And, you know, I think you could do a deep dive into these relationships that you know, the father or the parent has with the child and the impact of what that may have, you know, because in some of these cases, you know, you do it out of a sense of you feel secure, you know, who is going to be there for you. So Fritz very wisely, you know, booking his sons at the top of the card, he knew he was always going to have those main event baby faces in there, and then you could bring in the heels to come and go. But and same, you know, similar with Vern Gagne, you can trust those family members that are not going to just jump ship and leave and go somewhere else. There's going to be that sense of loyalty and whatnot. But, you know, those were just three other dads that kind of came up in my mind. But probably one of the more notable or significant fathers who wrestled and had a brief time wrestling with his sons, or at least with one of them, is Dusty Rhodes. And I this is where I'm more interested in hearing kind of your take, because we obviously didn't watch Vern Gagne and Bill Watts and Fritz Von Erich in their primes wrestle, so we didn't really have that gauge to compare. Dusty Rhodes, though, I think is really one of the first that we grew up watching, and then we watched his son Dustin in WCW and then Goldust later. And now we're watching his son Cody wrestle as part of the WWE, but now also in AEW. So in that little family dynamic, did the kids outdo dad, or is it still too early to tell with Cody still kind of being that rising star?
That's interesting, because as much as I like Dustin and Cody, I would be hard pressed to put them above Dusty.
Yeah.
Dusty just had that aura.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can remember when Dustin came into WWF, when they did the whole storyline with Dusty and Ted DiBiase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dustin didn't look ready for that position yet.
Right.
And then when he went back to WCW, he became the natural and he teamed with Barry Windham. I was a huge fan of that tag team. And you know, he grew into a performer there, but he was still not, you know, especially when you compare him to Dusty, he wasn't right. That larger-than-life persona.
And I don't think it helps that he looked so much like, he looked like a slimmed-down version of Dusty, too. And he was, you know, kind of typecast and in that shadow and constantly being compared. So I could see that, too.
Yeah. And then when he went, you know, back to WWF and became Goldust, I remember, I think it was like the second vignette that they had aired for him when my cousin pointed it out. He's like, is that Dustin Rhodes? Like, he encapsulated the character of Goldust perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, you know, I'd be curious, you know, there are rumors of, you know, like Terry Taylor has said when he became the Red Rooster, you know, there was a chance that he could have actually been Mr. Perfect because they were making those characters at the same time. And who do you give it to? You know, I think kind of like Mark Calloway being the Undertaker, would that character be the same if you had given it to, say, Sid, if Sid had come in?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I don't know if another wrestler could have pulled off the Gold Dust character the way Dustin has. And, you know, it's kind of shocking because when he is not Dustin, you know, when he was in TNA, even as Black Rain, or going back to WCW in the late 90s, going back to the Dustin persona, and even now in AEW, where he still does the face paint and stuff to kind of be Goldust-esque, but he doesn't have the same character. To me, he's still lacking that. Whatever he can do as Goldust, personality-wise, doesn't come across when he's just Dustin.
I 100% agree with you. To me, Goldust, and I did the top 10 wrestlers, my top 10 favorite wrestlers on Facebook a few weeks ago, and Goldust is on my list, and as Goldust, not as Dustin, and that's no disrespect to Dustin, but I was going to ask you about AEW, and admittedly, I don't watch it on a consistent basis. I do watch the highlights and the clips. I'm aware, obviously, of Dustin's role there, but have they really ever explained why he does the half face paint with the red paint? Because it's not, you know, like you said, it's not Dustin Rhodes as we remembered him from, you know, 1992, 3, 4, 5 in WCW. And it still kind of harkens back again to that Goldust gimmick that really, I think, put Dustin on the map and got him out of that shadow of the American Dream.
Yeah, I mean, if they had explained it, it may have been like early on.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, because they're not like WWE where they have to tell you 500 times every time he's out there. So, yeah, I don't know. I would assume it's just something to give people who, you know, the casual fan who doesn't know the difference, let's say, between AEW and WWE, if they see Dustin on TV in May, spark that recognition, whereas if he was just Dustin, they might not recognize him as Goldust. So, I don't know. It is very interesting that he does that.
I want one more opinion from you.
Okay.
And I want to know if you think, because it was 5 years ago this month that we lost the American Dream. He was 69 years old, so still relatively young. I feel like if he were still alive today, he would still be involved in some capacity with the world of professional wrestling. However, when he died, he had had an off-again, on-again relationship with WWE since the closure of WCW, and I don't think he was still doing stuff with NXT, because I do think he had fallen into some poor health and was taking some time away. Do you think AEW would exist today if Dusty Rhodes was still alive?
Yes, I do. I think AEW, you know, and I would be curious to know all about the back scene, behind the scenes formation of how AEW actually came to be about. But
mm-hmm.
I think with the popularity of the Young Bucks and I guess being the Elite, if you can get that money mark, which they have in the cons, that would happen. Would Cody be involved? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That one might be different, but, and even if Dusty was still doing stuff with NXT, you know, I could see Cody leaving like he did, and AEW basically being what we see today. Would Dusty come along? Would he leave NXT, or, you know, so that he could maybe not be involved in the day-to-day, but he could help Cody with ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that. I think from what people have said who went through NXT when Dusty was there, I think Dusty would stay there just because it was a chance to give back in a more meaningful way than just being someone to bounce ideas off of.
Okay. We're going to talk more about AEW and all of this, not this specifically, but we'll talk more about AEW on next week's show, where we talk more about fandom and how things are going in today's wrestling environment. I have at least a couple more names I want to throw out there to you and kind of get your thoughts. And, you know, will the children exceed their parents? Actually, three now that I'm thinking about it. Let's go with one that I kind of know how you feel about this individual. However, my opinion of him has changed over the last couple of years, and that is Randy Orton. His dad, of course, Cowboy Bob Orton, and his dad, of course, being Bob Orton Sr. Now, you and I grew up on Cowboy Bob, you know, being a part of Rowdy Roddy Piper, the Piper's Pit, you know, that early WWF days. Randy Orton obviously has exceeded, I feel like, the family tree in terms of success. Multi-time WWE champion, and just one of those guys who, you know, I know that we have criticized him in the past, but I really, over the last couple of years, have changed my stance and opinion of him. I would assume, though, that despite your opinion of Orton as a performer, do you put him above his father, Cowboy Bob?
I think he is definitely, you know, eclipsed his father, yes. Mm-hmm. Has he eclipsed his uncle, Barry O? That's up for debate. But yeah, I mean, the day that this episode drops...
I was not expecting that, by the way.
The day this episode drops, tonight on Monday Night Raw, Ric Flair is going to come out and coronate Randy Orton as the best wrestler ever. So,
okay,
I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty impressive that he is bigger than everybody that's ever wrestled for. Now,
like
I said, there should. Okay, go ahead.
No, go on.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, there, you know, I've never liked Orton. He's never really stood out to me in a positive manner, mm-hmm. and maybe that is because of some of the behind the scenes,
right?
Stuff that, you know, you've heard stories about, but I also just his in ring action. There's nothing, you know, talk about Dustin and having that larger than life persona as Goldust versus Dustin. Randy has always just been very bland, Randy Orton, mm-hmm. and yeah, there's even, you know, I watched his match at Backlash with Edge and then his match, if you will, against Christian. And I guess the guy who talks to his opponents after he's beaten them gimmick that he's doing now, maybe that will add a depth of character to him, but I've never seen what everyone else seems to see in Randy Orton.
Well, you know, and you and I were in the same boat, I think, for a long time. I don't know what changed for me, but obviously, as a heel, Randy Orton is amazing. And I think we'll probably explore this more when we talk next week in our fandom episode. But, I like what they've done with him since the Edge return and turning on Edge and all this. However, let me ask you this, because you brought up the Ric Flair presentation and the greatest wrestler of all time. Obviously, they just had this match at Backlash with Edge and Randy Orton calling it the greatest match of all time before it happened. Is WWE setting themselves up? Because obviously, if I were to look on paper, Randy Orton versus Edge, yeah, I think you're going to get a good match. You're going to get a quality match, but I don't think it's going to be the greatest match, especially, and this is not to knock Edge, who is approximately 6 months younger than me. So, I mean, we're both pushing that 50 mark, but, you know, are we expecting too much? Or is WWE, to me, it's almost like they're asking for the criticism, especially in today's environment that we talked about at the beginning of this show, where people are looking to shit on whatever they can shit on just for the sake of shitting on it. And so when you put a moniker like the greatest match of all time, that's one caveat. But now, are they taunting even more? And is this just a ploy to stir up and rile up the base And, you know, because I obviously don't believe WWE believes that Randy Orton is the greatest of all time, but is this just another one of those marketing moves to generate some heat on right now, arguably, if not the best, one of the best heels in the business right now?
Well, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard, you know, I read something online, so it has to be. But the reason why WWE called the match the best wrestling match ever is so that if people Google best wrestling match, WWE automatically comes up.
Oh. So
it's a marketing
ploy. Marketing. You know, I've been a year in the marketing business. You think I would have picked this up by now. Okay. I like that. I like that.
Which, I think you set yourself up for more ridicule by doing so because the match, you know, had the match ended up being like their match at WrestleMania, which was a 35-minute snooze fest, in my opinion. You know, especially since Edge did get injured in the match early on. You know, had he gotten severely injured where they couldn't have the match go any longer, I think you would have set yourself up for more ridicule. But I think this is just the latest ploy to be marketable. It has nothing to do with actual opinion. I don't think Vince cares about what people think as long as they're talking.
Okay. And
it's all good. And, you know, Randy Orton's been there for 18 years now.
Wow.
Almost. Which, again, we can go back to killing the territories and how a lot of WWE guys now get stale a lot quicker because they don't leave and come back.
You know? Yeah.
Like, again, we mentioned Dustin having short time in WWE, then going to NW, going back to WCW, then coming back to Goldust, then going back to WCW, which I think helps freshen up a character.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why I think Brock Lesnar works when he comes in, because you don't see him all the time. But then you have, you know, same thing with, like, John Cena, who had been there for 15, 16 years, and being pushed as the main guy for 10 of those years, 10, 11, fans are going to get burnt out.
Well, yeah, and let's save that's that conversation. That's a great topic, and I really do want to explore it. I want to hit at least two more dads here, and one you just mentioned, Nature Boy Ric Flair. I think 10 years ago, if you would have asked, we would have all been expecting to be having this conversation today with Reed Flair as the one, as the second generation star. Unfortunately, though, he died, about 7 years ago now, I guess. And Charlotte Flair kind of comes out of nowhere and fills that role of second generation star. Obviously, David Flair, I think, and he's joked about it, you know, he started off on top and then ended up, you know, wrestling in the armories and the state fair kind of events. Obviously was not long for the wrestling business, but Charlotte Flair, and this is another one, I think it's too early to tell, but I've said it before, and I think you agree. You know, Ric Flair is our all-time favorite. Those are big boots to fill, but I think Charlotte has done a good job, and I think that some people will argue that she has been kind of crammed down our throats, especially lately here. But there's just something about her that resonates with me as a fan, and, you know, I'd put her up against just about any guy out there as well. I think that she is the total package in terms of the look, the persona, and I guess I kind of want to also, when we talk about Charlotte, I want to bring in some other competitors like Curtis Axel, like Bo Sawyer, like Bray Wyatt, and why some of these characters embrace their legacy, if you will, their lineage. Bob Orton, Bob Orton and Randy Orton did it, obviously, as we talked about. But then you go to a Bo Sawyer, he's stride. Bo Dallas. Sorry, did I say Bo Sawyer earlier?
You did.
Jesus Christ. I'm always afraid I'm going to announce
Bo. Also a second generation.
Yeah. I'm always afraid of announcing Bo Sawyer as Bo Dallas when we're at stride events, and now I'm calling Bo Dallas Bo Sawyer. I'm also on my second beer as we record this episode, and I apologize for this. However, so it's an interesting dynamic, I think, and I'm probably throwing two talking points out there, but some of these superstars embrace their bloodline, while others for whatever reason, they don't go full circle with it. Obviously, you know, Bray Wyatt, they've never really publicly talked about the fact that he is Mike Rotundo's son, and Blackjack Mulligan's grandson, for that matter. And kind of the same with Bo Dallas, I think. Am I right there?
Yeah, I don't think they've ever mentioned it. And I don't know if you heard my smart-ass comment, but I said they've never mentioned that Bray Wyatt is Bo Sawyer's brother.
Right, yes.
Either.
Yeah.
I just have to get that in there. And, you know, what's interesting is, like, in the case of Curtis Axel, where they changed his name, but then they keep telling you on commentary, oh, he's the son of Kurt Hennig. He's the grandson of Larry the Axe Hennig. And it's like, well, then why isn't his name Hennig? You know, why is he Curtis Axel? Why don't you play up?
Well, and I'll point out with that one, at least they went from Michael McGillicuddy, which was completely not anywhere related to that, to kind of explaining with Curtis Axel that he's adopting, it was kind of like Rocky Maivia, who we're going to, I was saving him for last, but the Curtis Axel name obviously coming from Kurt Hennig and Larry the Axe Hennig. But I agree, why not just call him Joe Hennig? Or, but then does that, this is again, it's an interesting conversation, because to me, Goldust was much more successful as Goldust than he was as Dustin Rhodes. However, could Curtis Axel have been more successful if he would have just been allowed to be Joe Hennig?
Possibly. You know, I think what really probably killed Joe Hennig's career was the Age of McGillicuddy promo that he cut after winning NXT, which went nowhere. But, you know, I believe... You know, Henning was the one that worked with The Rock when he started making his comeback and helped getting him back into ring shape.
Yeah.
So I think he's a solid wrestler, but then again, there's, you know, a part of it too is that WWE has so many people on their roster that aren't being used. It, you know, does it come down to creative not having anything for him? Is it that they just, that he doesn't have the personality to get over? But then if they never use him in a manner to get him over, you know, it's this whole catch 22 infinity loop of booking versus presence. So I don't know. I think I believe Curtis Axel was released earlier this year.
He was
put on furlough. So I think for him, and this is, I think, the big test for a lot of the guys that got released, the gals, is, are they sitting at home waiting on either to be brought back to WWE or for Impact or AEW to bring them in because they have the WWE brand, you know, association with them? Or are they going to go out and hit the independent scene and kind of reinvent themselves there and then try to work their way back, you know, to the top of the mountain, so to speak? And I think a lot of the guys that don't do that, then you question, okay, let's use Joe Hennig as an example. You know, does that mean he doesn't care about wrestling and only got into it hoping to tread on a family name? Or has he been in WWE long enough that he just got discouraged and has other passions that he wants to pursue?
Right. Well, and I think we kind of saw that with Ted DiBiase, you know, Million Dollar Man, one of the most iconic characters and a second generation wrestler in his own right. Both his mother and stepfather, the man who raised him, Mike DiBiase, were wrestlers back in the day, and that carried on. And then, of course, Ted DiBiase Jr. and Brett DiBiase had a much smaller run, but, you know, Jr. walked away at one point as well. And I feel like with him, and again, this kind of brings that debate back full circle with, how far from the tree do you want the apple to drop? You know, when Charlotte Flair emulates Ric Flair, she has the big flowing robes, she has the look, she does the woo. Sometimes I feel like with Charlotte, though, it is a little forced. I wish that they kind of let her do a little bit more outside of the Flair box. But I get it. I understand why they're doing it. You know, with Ted DiBiase Jr., for example, bringing in Virgil at one point and the Million Dollar Belt, and to me, I debate myself with this sometimes, because it's like you have this legacy, But do you want to just put all your eggs in that basket where, you know, we just said with Joe Hennig, you know, with Curtis Axel, do you want him to be his own individual? And as we get to The Rock, we'll talk more about that. But it's like Ted DiBiase Jr. looked great. He was okay on the mic. He obviously did not hold up to what his dad could do. But, you know, I also feel like with Barry Windham and Blackjack Mulligan, for example, you know, I didn't know for a long time that Barry Windham was Blackjack Mulligan's son. And, you know, Blackjack Mulligan's daughter married Mike Rotundo. So that, you know, Blackjack Mulligan is the grandfather of Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas. So it just, I'd be interested to sit in on a meeting and understand why some wrestlers are given this gimmick versus that gimmick versus we're going to keep the family name and keep that legacy alive. Perhaps Mike Rotundo, IRS, was not a big enough brand, a big enough name to pass along to Bo and to Bray versus, you know, you also don't want to have Mr. Perfect Jr. out there wrestling either. So or the second incarnation of the Million Dollar Man, I thought it was played out and it was too much pandering to the past. Whereas as a fan of that in 1987, it did not work in 2007 for me. What do you think?
Well, I'm with you. I think the Million Dollar Man gimmick, one, you know, they tried it kind of on another wrestler prior to Ted DiBiase Jr. coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little guy by the name of the Ringmaster.
Right, right.
That didn't really take off. That guy never did anything. And then, you know, in the terms of Mr. Perfect's son, you know, would have been too jokey to call him like Mr. Subpar or Mr. Because you already have above average Mike Sanders from mm-hmm. WCW days. But if you play, you know, did something where you acknowledge he wasn't as good as his dad, but was okay, Mr. Adequate, I don't know, Mr. Middle of the Road, but yeah. But you know, yes, it's if they. I think what hurts a person is depending on how popular the first generation star is,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I'll kind of we'll get in that when we start talking about the last name because you know, like Eric Watts going into WCW, other than when I first started watching UWF, and I remember the angle that they did with the Russian. Whose name I can't remember, but with Eddie Gilbert, like mm-hmm. meeting up Bill Watts. You know, I didn't know Bill Watts.
Right.
So seeing Eric Watts, I think for him, it was the nepotism angle. It would have been like if Shane McMahon came out and, you know, was heavyweight champion immediately.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now I know Eric Watts never won the championship, but because, like, to me, like, when Eric Watts showed up in TNA in the early 2000s, he was much better than he was personality-wise in WCW. So, yeah, that aspect. But, yeah, I think if you have a father who is a big-time legend, let's say,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be overshadowed, you know, because, like, Bo Dallas in NXT created the Bo Dallas character, and he created a well-developed three-dimensional character that worked.
Right.
Bray Wyatt did the same thing. Whereas if you brought them in as IRS Jr., and that's the other thing, you know, Mike Rotunda to any casual fan would be more well known as IRS than
right.
Mike Rotunda.
Sure.
Or Michael Wall Street or, you know.
Right.
So you can, you don't need that name there. And even Blackjack Mulligan and Barry Windham, there's a big enough difference, and the internet didn't exist when Barry Windham came in. So,
right.
Basically, I'm just talking in circles saying I think if you have big shoes to fill, the best thing to do is try to be, I mean, it goes back to Dustin and Goldust
mm-hmm.
when he was the natural, just kind of filling in for Dusty. It didn't really work, but when he created his own character and got to show off his own personality, that's where it works. I think that's a good segue into your last person of note.
Absolutely, and I think, though, to your point, kind of taking some of that from Dad, and bringing it in, Charlotte Flair, for example, Gold Dust, Dusty Rhodes, you know, keeping a piece of that as The Rock, Rocky Maivia did as well with his famous father, Rocky Johnson, and then, of course, grandfather Peter Maivia, who was Rocky Johnson's father-in-law. I feel like that may be the balance, is if you keep part of that, but also create your own identity in the process. You know, because as we mentioned back in the day, you know, Cowboy Bob Orton didn't emulate Bob Orton Sr. per se, or we didn't really see a whole lot of the same kind of thing coming out of Kurt Hennig that Larry the Axe Hennig was doing. So, you know, it wasn't like it was Kurt the Hatchet. You know, Kurt created his own niche. And of course, obviously, when he went to the WWE, it became the Mr. Perfect character. It obviously changed him for the better. But Rocky Maivia, Rocky Johnson, The Rock is our final talk here. And the potential now for a fourth generation superstar, and we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, I feel like The Rock is probably that great example of third generation superstar who has gone on to exceed what foundation was laid by his grandfather and by his father, and, you know, one of the all-time greats, and definitely on my Mount Rushmore of all-time favorites. But where are you on the, do you remember, Peter Maivia was obviously before my time, but I do remember very vividly Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas winning the WWF Tag Team Championships and then losing them subsequently. So Rocky Johnson was on my radar, but obviously not to the degree that The Rock was and then obviously blew up and became.
Yeah, I was going to say to people who are fans of The Rock, you know, when The Rock came to be in the late 90s, how many of them knew who Rocky Johnson was outside of his appearance at WrestleMania 13.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people knew who Peter Maivia was. So you had WWE telling you, this is the, you know, third generation star, these are his father and grandfather. But I didn't have any I didn't have any recollection of Peter Maivia or even Rocky Johnson. Like, he was out of WWF at the time I started watching WWF. And so, you know, and it's that thing where, like you mentioned, the name Rocky Maivia comes from the previous generation, and he obviously kind of failed as Rocky Maivia, you know, happy-go-lucky, spunky, you know, rookie. And it wasn't until he got to develop a personality and became The Rock that he got over and became the biggest, most electrifying sports entertainer. So it's another, I think it's another example where if you try to play into the past, it hinders the story, where you need to let them develop their own character. And you know, that's where going back to like Charlotte Flair and Goldust, where you have these guys, Dusty and Rick and even Mr. Perfect, who still have a legacy with today's audience. They're mm-hmm. still brought up, or they're still, you know, in Ric Flair's case, still show up on TV. Dusty did show up, you know, a couple of years prior to his passing with Dustin and Cody.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Rocky Maivia, The Rock never, you know, I'm trying to think if there were any other times besides WrestleMania 13 where they had Rocky Johnson at ringside.
Right.
So, yeah, I think if you play into the family aspect too hard, it hinders too much. But then also, I guess if you don't have any recognition or recollection of somebody, then what's the point of referencing them? Because it's not, you know, you can tell me how great somebody is, but if I can't see it from my own eyes, I'm going to think that Randy Orton is the greatest wrestler ever.
Right. And, you know, obviously with The Rock and why I kind of saved him for last is he is part of such a huge dynasty. You know, we mentioned obviously his father and grandfather, but he's part of that whole Samoan unit where, you know, Roman Reigns is a cousin. Afa and Sika, the Wild Samoans, are uncles. You have the Usos in there. Rikishi. You know, there's so much meat on that bone, so to speak. But I wonder, you know, with his daughter Simone, who has allegedly, you know, started training, and I'm not 100% sure. I felt like I saw her in the crowd on NXT the other night. I may be wrong about that. But do you feel like with her now, the first, well, asterisks, the first fourth generation superstar, because you could argue Shane and Stephanie with, you know, their great grandfather being a part of it, but, you know, I can't imagine the pressure that this young girl feels, especially, number one, she's only 18. Number two, we have seen before where WWE has pushed guys like her father, for example, back in 96 when he first came in, and the fans just absolutely annihilated him. And kind of the same with Roman Reigns in terms of the push. Obviously, she's just getting started now, so we don't know where she's going to end up. And with COVID and all this, you know, who knows when we'll see shows and go back to the way things used to be. But, you know, does she have a chance? I mean, what can she do to eclipse what may be one of the, you know, I would think in the conversation at least probably definitely top 10, but maybe top 5 greatest superstars of all time?
It'll be interesting to see what she does, because having not seen anything out of her, I don't know what her, you know, is she David Flair or is she Charlotte Flair?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that WWE doesn't rush her into an on-air performer before she's ready.
Yeah.
I can definitely see him trying to do so, to capitalize on the fact that she's The Rock's daughter. But, I mean, if she's only, you said 18 or...
Mm-hmm. She might be 19 by now, so...
Because I know when Bo Dallas was in NXT, I remember reading something about they didn't want anybody... Like, he had been touring with the Raw and SmackDown rosters to get a taste of what it's like, but then they took him off because they didn't want anybody under the age of 21 to be on the road. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll get lucky and, you know, they'll keep her down in NXT for a good 3 or 4 years while she's training, but then do they rush her onto NXT before she's ready? I don't know. But I think she is going to have a lot to live up to. It'll be interesting to see when they bring her in. You know, do they call her Simone Johnson? Do they call her Pebbles? How will they acknowledge that she is the Rock's daughter? Because you know they're going to.
Sure, absolutely.
So will it be a Curtis Axel situation, or will it be a Rocky Maivia situation?
Well,
we'll have to wait and see.
Yes, time will tell. And obviously there is a litany of other fathers involved in wrestling, but we can't continue to talk all day, you know, but we appreciate you listening, tuning in. Chad, thanks for being here. He's going to stick around for next week's episode as well, so stay tuned for that. And thanks for listening this week, and we will talk again very soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.